just tell me again a little bit about your family background. Who came from Italy and when?
From my grandparents on my mother's side and my father's side came from Italy. Sister, I think her father came over first. I'm not sure how many years he was here before he sent for the family. Italy and met here. Outside of Palermo, I mean, it's like a province out there.
Four grandparents came from Italy.
Right.
From Sicily. Tell me once that the original family name was Baudo.
Baudo. Right.
B-A-U-D-O.
Yeah, they either left the U out by mistake when they came through Ellis Island, or just...
It wasn't a choice by your family, it was somebody else.
Yeah, it was a mistake, I think, just the way they...
Yeah. Wrote it out.
Right.
And did they settle in near Cleveland?
My mother's... side went to Pennsylvania first, then to Cleveland. My mother was born, I think, in Pennsylvania, but as an infant came over to Cleveland. I think my mother's father was a barber.
Yes.
Father was a contractor. So I didn't know what they were talking
about.
I didn't pay attention. I wish, now that I'm, you know, 64, I wish I would have learned it when they were speaking.
Just like me. My grandmother would speak Italian to me and I'd answer in English.
Yeah.
You decided you want to be a ball player. Did they support that at all?
Oh, they were very, I mean, I played all the sports in high school I was out of Ohio one time for a tournament in Altoona, Pennsylvania, and then I went all the way across. Because when you come across four kids in between my sister and I.
Yes.
And then two,
because I know all their stats and stuff. Won three straight World Series.
I think the first, winning the first World Series is always the biggest season. So you're excited when you get there, but then it's more games. And then you deal with the media and it starts to really weigh on you because it's just not playing a ball game anymore. And you got football going on at the time, you know, so you really got to keep your focus. And I think when you win, the first thing you feel is relief. It's over. Recognize what you've accomplished. Is you're getting ready for next season.
Right. Well, those are amazing. I asked you this before. Generally, as you were growing up, Italian ball players in the Navy.
And, you know, my dad always would talk about Joe DiMaggio. Grew up, there were a lot of Italians in the small community, the blue-collar community that grew up with. Said he wanted. No, I think he was a Cleveland Indians fan.
Okay.
But one of my fondest memories was in 1954. He took near the right field foul line. I remember Yogi Berra hitting the pole in the fifth inning to tie the game up for the Yankees. But always something a little special with the same bloodline, you know, be it a teammate or a guy on the other club. Stuff like that, where there's a connection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd have to be married Italian to let you name your kids Salvatore, Santino, and Stefano.
Yeah.
Well, and she came down on vacation with her friend, their girlfriend. You know, I played a couple months in the big leagues, and then it was really right before I made it to big leagues. You know, so in that era, I mean, Roberto Clemente and Cepeda and those guys all played down there. They helped spring me to the major leagues because it gave me the confidence, as my mother would always ask me. I don't know why, they haven't met the right one. So now I meet my wife-to-be down in Puerto Rico. I come up and I've said, Ma, you'll never guess. She goes, what? I said, I met an Italian girl and I'm in love. She doesn't say it.
Me?
She goes, what part of Italy is her family from? So that was, I couldn't believe that, but yeah.
And was she Sicilian?
No, she was from, her family's from the Sorrento and Naples. I don't know, I just was so stunned.
That's typical.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit then about managerial experience.
I really did. After I retired as a player, we had started. So I was doing that, and Bud asked me to stay in the organization, kind of assistant to Harry Dalton,
right.
Kind of a lead. And I was offered the opportunity twice to manage.
Really?
Yeah. And when
Humphreys wall thing as it could have been South.
I think Harvey turned out to be the right guy for the, at that time, you know, they just needed a personality like that. Everything works out for a reason.
How was that experience once you did accept the G?
The toughest 8 years I've ever spent. That's when it really became small market. We're trying to compete when he's trying to get a stadium and afford to do that because you can't afford to get your ears beaten and get a new stadium, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we did the best we could with trying to stay competitive enough so he can get a stadium.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. So it just was very difficult time.
Were there any other Italian GMs at the time, do you recall?
Colangelo was the owner. They were an expansion team when Lucchino was with Baltimore when I was a GM. I don't think there were any general managers that I can recall. Oh, I got fairly close to Junior.
You did?
Because he would come in to see Bud, and Bud would always either have me pick him up or bring him to the airport or, you know, so he and I had those one-on-one conversations, and what I thought was interesting, we would, you know, I would confide in him, you know, things that I knew, you know, such as, you know, got some owner. I don't know if you know Archbishop Dolan.
Not personally.
But he's that type of just excitement when you talk to him, and just it lights up a room. And Giamatti was just down to earth, but yet he could be at that other level. I mean, he just was a great guy.
Yeah,
no, he was outstanding. I was sad because it was such a short period. And I know.
I wanted to talk to you, too, about some of the people you knew and the first coach for
2 years.
2 years.
He was our hitting coach, yeah.
So he was actually the hitting coach.
Well, right.
Uh-huh. It wasn't just a name job.
Well, you know, the hitting coach in those days is not like the hitting coaches today with video. I mean, it were somebody that knew a little bit about hitting. You know, they just didn't have the specialty that they have today.
Right.
And
No.
But I'll tell you what, I have never, in those days, we didn't have charter planes. I'm saying everybody would stop and park. He took me under his wing somewhat. But he was a quiet man, a reserved man, so he wasn't always outgoing. So that you can get to know Joe D, because he was Catholic, you know. And in those sort of dark moods, what was it? Still quiet. Ate a lot of sunflower seeds. He, you know, sat there on the bench. You know, didn't try to manage or anything. I'm sure, in his own mind, he's probably wondering, as great as he watching all these young guys, you know, how far we had to go.
Yeah. Why do you think he did that? Why did he take?
Well,
that?
I know he got paid at that time a lot of money, $100,000 to be a coach. To make a statement in the Bay Area. I'm a vice president. I guess he was any coach, but he was a vice president. He gave him $100,000. Did that for 2 years. It's a lot of money in 1968
and 69. Mm-hmm.
This one
right now.
You know what? It was right on.
Really?
From my experience, it was right on.
In terms of him being, he talks about these supposed times.
I didn't know anything about that, but I mean, as far as Joe as a personality. I also, because of my having played a tournament called American Airlines, I was always there, and Otto Graham was his partner. And so, because we knew each other, we always would converse, or, you know, so I got to know him better than most because there was a common thread that we were both with the A's at that time, and Shins, that because they invited executive, I never met them.
Total opposite. I mean, you heard about him as a kid from your dad and others.
Right.
So when you met him, was it sort of?
I mean, and then after a while, you realize just like anyone else, you know.
Were you a little disappointed that he turned out to be?
Well, you know, I thought he could have been a little bit more helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, not just me, but you know. Then I understand, you know, once you get into it, you can see what New York was like and the rise the way he was. He was a private person.
Now, one of your teammates has told me he's Italian, but never, he is, his mother must be part Italian.
He claims it was his father's
story. I never did.
He claims that his great, either great or great-great-grandfather, I forget what he said, he thought the family name had been, but it was changed. He said first, he's vague about all of it.
Well, it could be, because he grew up in Steubenville, Ohio, and that had a lot of Italians.
Ah.
He went to California, but yeah. I mean, he was born in Steubenville. I used to tease him, Steubenville.
Never spoke about being
no.
It never came up.
My roommate, Gene Tennis was, too.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah. That's the other guy I wanted to ask you about. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, really, yeah, he never really
never talked. Brought it up, yeah. Even with you.
Well, he did once in a while, but I don't think I ever paid attention, because Raleigh was so goofy anyway.
I don't know what to do with that information. I guess on the one hand, why would he make it up?
Yeah, I don't, he wouldn't make
not,
it up.
But nobody's ever acknowledged him.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame in Chicago. That's why I not even know.
I don't know if his dad's alive.
About Fiore Tenacci.
Well, where we roomed together for parents, because they'd come up, we'd play in Cleveland, they'd come up from just together. And, well, I just called them this morning.
Oh, yeah?
I left a message because I'm trying to get a hold of them. Sure, I'll give you a cell number.
Okay. Just call him Gino, or what?
Yeah, Gino. And Tenacci was his real name.
That's Phil Rizzuto's actual name as well. His name, even though in the book, oh, very Italian?
No, I don't think so. I think he became more Italian because we roomed together.
Mm.
I think in southern Ohio was a little bit different. Around Portsmouth area, many Italians.
Right.
We were very good about them.
Yeah. His parents and his brother. It kind of brings you, Rico Petrocelli, played against Rico, real quiet guy, but, you know, good guy.
Mm-hmm.
They were good guys, you know.
I talked to Rico at length at the Ted Williams Museum. It was a very interesting connection.
Yeah, very good.
What about Billy Conigliaro? What do you remember him as a ball player?
He had a lot of talent. I think he just... Always was living in the shadow of his brother, no matter what he did, and then the Trat, and they were a close-knit family, and then the Beanie. There's a lot of heartache there in that family, you know.
Before, when he was still...
Because I was called up in 66, when he was still with the Red Sox, when he had some good years, but he quite was the singer because of that Beanie.
We had one good...
Billy, he was a piece of work. He always called me Dave. One of the ways I got to know Billy is because I would take the lineup cards out as the captain and exchange with him. And my favorite story with Billy Martin is we got in a big fight with Detroit. Most fights, you pull guys apart and you're pushing and shoving. Anyhow, the next day, Sunday, we come out to exchange lineup cards. And on a lineup card, it has extra men. And I look at his lineup card, and on the extra man, he's got Rocky Marciano, Carmen Basilio.
He's got all these fighters written down there.
I laughed. He had a good laugh.
Did he give it to the umpire?
Oh, yeah. Well, you exchange, and then they give you a copy. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. What else do you remember about him?
Well, he was fiery. You know, he had, Billy was, he'd like to intimidate you if he could. But manager, I think he took away from his reputation as a good manager by the crazy things he did.
Do you remember the first major league game that you saw?
That I remember was a doubleheader against the Yankees, 1954, in Cleveland. And the Indians won a doubleheader, and they went on to win the pennant that year and lose to the Giants in the World Series. But one thing I do remember, we sat down near the right field foul pole, and Yogi Berra hit a home run in the ninth inning to send it to extra innings, but the Indians ended up winning. But that, I remember that game, and then I, as a kid, as I got older, I got to, you know, I take the rapid transit down to the downtown and go to games. Does the old huge Cleveland stadium. Municipal Stadium.
Yeah. Often empty, wasn't it?
Yes.
So when did you know that you wanted to play professional ball?
I think when I was a senior in high school and I had to choose between football and baseball, and I thought baseball long term was a better avenue for me, and I hoped I was good enough to play. And when I had the scholarship to go to Arizona State, that just confirmed that I had a chance, and then being able to compete out there against kids from California, been playing the game all year, been doing well, it really got my attention that I had a chance to play professional ball.
Well, you didn't just compete. I mean, you sort of led them to the World Series, College World Series title, didn't you? In your second year, you saw
them. Yeah, my junior year, we won the College World Series, and I was named Most Valuable Player of the tournament. And then the year before, we went as a sophomore, but we had a couple injuries, and we got knocked out early.
So you didn't play as a freshman.
Freshmen weren't allowed to play in those days.
Right.
Yeah, right.
You discuss your time as captain of the A's?
Well, I was named by Hank Bauer in 1969, which would have been my second full year. I had been up and down in 67 and 66 a little bit, but I said to Hank, are you sure you want me to do this? He said, well, you don't want it? I said, I didn't say that. I said, are you sure? I'm only, my second full year. He says, well, you've been doing the job without the title, so we give you the title. And so I was very appreciative, and so I was captain there, and then when I went to Milwaukee, they named me captain. So it was a nice honor. But I never looked at it as anything got held over the player's head. I was just like they were. My job was to communicate with them. I patted them on the back like I would want to be patted on the back when I'm struggling, but never lording it over anybody.
There were some pretty strong personalities on Reggie Jackson and Fingers.
They were, but they were friends, and I think I handled it well enough where there was no animosity or jealousy about it, and it worked out. And I had different managers who continued to name me captain, so I think that I didn't embarrass the position.
Can you talk? Well,
no, I'm good. Go ahead.
How did the mustache thing start with the A's?
Well, Reggie had a beard. And in those days, there was an unwritten rule, about facial hair. And Finley didn't want to tell Reggie to shave it, so he paid us all $300 to grow mustaches. And it just caught on, and it became a symbol, and what turned out to be, an embarrassment for the team that Reggie had a beard turned out to be our identity.
So Finley didn't want to do anything to upset Jackson, is that the idea?
Because he didn't want to have to call him and tell him to shave, so if we all had it, then maybe he would shave it because he didn't stand out. And it turned out we all loved it, so it worked out.
Earlier that one of your duties as captain was to take out the scorecard. Did you do that the whole time?
The lineup card, yes.
Lineup.
Most of the time I did, yeah.
What else? I mean, you said you communicated.
I was, because of my position at third base, I was close to the pitcher, so I remind them of how we're pitching guys, try to encourage them if they were struggling, Correct. You know, and then what it did, it gave managers and even the owner one person to go to pass on information and not having to go to all the different players at different times. So I was also a vehicle for management to communicate with what was going on.
What do you think Bauer saw that, I mean, you were only in your second full year, you were still quite young. What do you think he saw that convinced him?
Well, I think he saw my desire to win at all costs. I was willing to pay the price to win. And where I think sometimes you get players who are just happy to be there and putting in their time. And so I was honored that he saw that in me. And I think that was a big reason, my drive to win.
Someone like Reggie, who had that temperament, no problem with him?
No, well, Reggie and I, we both went to Arizona State, and he was a freshman when I was a junior, so we were friends, and look, Reggie was a key to our ball club, so I wasn't taking anything away from him. We all had a different job, and if we did our job right, we would win, and we did.
The image is that even though you guys won those three World Series in a row, there's always a tumultuous atmosphere, even among the players, not just with the owner. Is that right?
Well, I think it was mostly players against the owner, and we did have some disagreement, but because, you know, when you get a handle that you guys are unhappy or you're frustrated, everything gets blown out of proportion. And I've been, you know, when I went to Milwaukee, there were disagreements, but it never got written about because it was no big deal. But in Oakland, that seemed to be the focus. And we only had really one writer that traveled with us. And so, you know, he was in hog heaven getting all this information. But, yeah, we had disagreements, and it always seemed to happen. Like one time, Raleigh and Blue Moon Odom getting a fight right before the World Series starts. You know, so that makes headlines. So we always had different episodes, but no different than any other club.
Well, what about the relations with the owner?
Yeah, well, that was, you know, we had an owner who, at the very beginning, was very comforting. But as we got successful, he became more difficult. And really, there was a lot of friction between front office and the players. And quite honestly, it really brought us together as players because we had one common enemy.
What made him difficult?
I think he just wanted things his way, and he wasn't going to give in to anyone. We always complained about not flying charter. We were always flying commercial, and when you're out in Oakland, I mean, that's tough. It's a tough way to travel. And when you have a, you know, night game, then you got to follow a night game somewhere on the road. So that was a complaint. He was very cheap. When we found out what other players were making that were comparable or at the same position, they were paid much more. That arbitration brought upon more disagreements with ownership. So it was always issues. Most of the time, they were non-baseball. They were just part of living.
Well, he's very hands-on, wasn't he? Kind of meddlesome?
Meddlesome, hands-on from Chicago. Wasn't never in Oakland. So it was always by phone.
Really?
Yeah. We had a situation one time where Reggie had blasted Finley in the paper about flying commercial. So it's a Sunday, and I'm on the field to take batting practice, and one of his errand boys comes out to get me, and Mr. Finley wants to talk to you on the phone. So I go up to his office, and he put him on the phone. He says, "Mr. Bando, I read Mr. Jackson's comments. He said, would you tell Mr. Jackson and the team that I can't afford charter planes?" So I said to Mr. Finley, "I'll tell him whatever you want, but we know you can afford charter planes." There's a long pause. He goes, "Thank you, Mr. Bando," and hangs up. I mean, so it's stuff like that.
But then you had your own specific issue with him over contract.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was always something. I mean, he never wanted to pay you, and at that time, he had all the leverage. When he lost that leverage, that's when it became even more difficult.
When did he lose the leverage?
When arbitration came into being, and you got to see across the board what people were making.
Didn't you guys come close to striking at one time?
Right. We would have been the only strike by one team in baseball. And that was in 1976. We were chasing the Kansas City Royals. And Finley had sold Vita to the Yankees, Joe Rudy and Raleigh to Boston. And the commissioner disallowed the sale, sent the players back to Oakland. And Finley would not play them because he was going to file a lawsuit against the commissioner's office. And so we needed those guys to compete. And so we had a meeting and held the meeting. And it was unanimous that we said, let's go out on strike. This was a Friday. I called Finley after the game Friday night, told him that if they weren't in the lineup Sunday, we were going out on strike. I cleared it with Marvin Miller, who was our head of the Player Association, who really didn't want us to do it, but said, let's talk Sunday morning. After telling Finley what our plans were after the game Friday, after he called me every name in the book, he went on radio and blasted us. We played Saturday's game and lost. We're playing the Twins, I think. And then talked to Marvin Sunday morning. He asked us to have another meeting to see and tell him how he felt. We had the meeting, and I won't use the language that the player said, but it was screw him. And so I called Marvin. I said, we're going out. And after batting practice, after infield practice, it's about 12:45, 1 o'clock game, we start taking our uniforms off. Chuck Tanner's on the phone communicating with Finley, and Chuck wants us to strike because he wants those players to play. And all of a sudden he comes running in with the lineup, posts the lineup, and Rudy's in the lineup. And that ended the threat of the strike. But the fact was, we had writers from all over the world, not the United States world, because this would have been the first time. And a sidebar to that was, we got out there a little late, and Gene Mauch was going to protest the game because we came out late. But he forgot to put the DH on his lineup card, so he couldn't protest it. And so we played the game. And we ended up losing the pennant by 2 games, and we didn't have those guys for about a week. And plus the time to get back into baseball shape. So I think we could have won our division again that year.
So you won 3 consecutive World Series. Is there even apart from that, is there any one memory that stands out in terms of as you as a player?
Well, always the first one, I think, when you win, because you've never experienced it. And to beat Cincinnati without Reggie and without Darryl Knowles, our number one left-handed reliever, I think speaks volumes for the type of talent we had. We beat Cincinnati in 7 games. 6 of the games were one-run games, so they were all tense games. And I think that is a memorable feeling for me because of the first one.
Yeah. What about you roomed with Gene Tennis, right?
Right.
Talk a little bit about your connection with other Italian-American ball players like Tennis.
Well, Gino and I just kind of hit it off, and it was in the era where you didn't have rooms by yourself, right. You know. So we roomed together and things were most of our time in Oakland. So I was there 10 years, I'll bet 8 of them, Gina and I were roommates. And we were just good friends. And then I think, trying to think who else, Billy Conigliaro was on our team at one time. And, you know, we became close with him. We had some guys, I can't remember right now, whose mothers were Italian, but they didn't have... everybody thought Joe Rudy was Italian, but he wasn't.
And nobody thought Gene Tenace.
So you're right. They didn't realize it was Tenace. But over the years, as you play against guys that are Italian, there's that common bond a little bit. Yeah. Rico Petrocelli and I would always talk.
Do you think the bond with Tenace was because you were both Italian?
We're both from Ohio. Both Italian. Gino was soft-spoken, you know, kind of new to the major leagues, so I kind of took him under my wing, and then we just grew real close, and we lived near each other. In fact, Joe Rudy and Raleigh and Gino and I lived in the same area together, so we carpooled to the ballpark every night. So, okay. So it really is a close team.
Yeah. Well, Joe D was a hitting coach for a couple of years.
Right.
Did he help you as a hitter at all?
Well, you know, the problem with Joe was he was such a natural as a hitter that he didn't have to think about it and break it down. It just came natural. So what people do today, looking at films and breaking down pitches and that, no, we didn't have that. So Joe was mostly a theory guy, you know, look for this, or if you're not comfortable, back off the plate, but not in the mechanics of hitting. But his presence was unbelievable. I mean, the aura that he had with visiting players and media and coaches, and, you know, they held him up as a god, and we got to know him as just a coach. So it was a great experience.
Was he as quiet as his reputation?
Very quiet. Loved to eat sunflower seeds. And I thought it was a cute story. We were going into Cleveland for the first time, and my dad was really excited about meeting DiMaggio because he'd come with me to the ballpark earlier. And I told him, I said, Dad, don't go up to Joe, because if you go up to him, he won't give you the time of day. But if you sit there and just kind of sit in the dugout during batting practice, he might come up and sit next to you and start talking. Well, sure enough, my dad's in the dugout. Joe's eating sunflower seeds on the other end of the dugout. And the writers go to bother Joe, and he doesn't want to talk to him. So he gets up and goes and sits next to my dad and starts talking. And my dad was in hog heaven the whole batting practice to talk to Joe. So that was
he did talk.
He did talk when he wanted to talk.
Yeah. You didn't change your stance? Or
no. Joe, again, in that era, you didn't have hitting coaches that broke it down.
Right.
He was there as a hitting coach, but he was there because he was Joe DiMaggio.
Didn't he have a more than just batting coach title?
I mean, well, he's the vice president of something or other, but he lived in San Francisco, and our pitching coach lived in San Francisco, and they would drive back and forth to get Bill Postel. In fact, Bill would say there were some days Joe never said a word to him. You know, and Joe was like that, so.
Did he travel with the team?
Oh, yeah, he traveled. Yeah, he was full-time.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, just having Joe DiMaggio on the bench or on the field and the opposing players and coaches interact with him because...
Well, the opposing coaches, you know, that either played against him or knew him, and he would chat with them a little bit. The writers would always swarm around him in different ballparks, you know.
Did you get to know any of the San Francisco area ball players from an earlier era? Were they all... thinking of guys like Cookie Lavaggetto.
I got to meet those guys at different outings or functions, but didn't really interact with them because the Giants were still the big team in the Bay Area, having been there before we got there. But I got to meet Cookie Lavaggetto and different guys like that.
Because most of the important early ballplayers, Italians, were from San Francisco.
Let's go right.
You know, Lazzari, DiMaggio, Crucetti.
I knew Frank when as a coach. I played third base and he coached the Yankees. So
what was he like?
Oh, he was he talked all the time. I mean, he was just nonstop, you know. So he was a good guy, but nonstop talking.
Heckling or?
No, just chatter, just talking. Always wanted to talk.
So you're playing third?
Yeah, in between innings and whenever there's a lull, you know.
It's interesting because his reputation with the media was that he didn't talk very much.
Right. Well, I didn't feel comfortable.
He was a chatter guy on the ball field as a shortstop.
Yeah.
Crucetti, Lazzari, Ernie Lombardi.
Yeah.
First Italian to win an MVP. Just a whole bunch of them from San Francisco.
Right.
Dom, as well as Joe and Vince.
Billy Martin was it?
Oh,
he was.
Oh yeah.
Oakland. Yeah. Billy Martin.
Billy Martin was a guy who wore his Italian on his sleeve like Tommy Lasorda.
Right, yeah. The funny thing I had, because I took the lineup cards out, with Martin, we got in a fight with Detroit like on a Friday night. So Saturday now, I bring out the lineup card, and under extra men, he's got Carmen Basilio, Rocky Marciano. He's got all these Italian fighters. It was funny. So. And he always called me Danks. That was his nickname. Hey, Danks.
A lot of other people have said that about him. Great baseball, Mark.
Oh, he knew, yeah.
Yeah, but self-destructive.
Yeah, exactly.
If you look back, what does or what did baseball mean to you overall in your life?
Well, I think it obviously is a way of life. I mean, it was provided for our family. But I was able to do something that my dad never was able to do, and that is do something as a living that you like. And my father worked because he had to work.
He was in construction.
He was, yeah, subcontractor. But, you know, that was his trade. But, it was a way to make a living. Whereas I was making a living doing something I love. And I think, and I'm very thankful for that. And I'm thankful for my parents giving me the opportunity to do that and be supportive.
Well, they were supportive because a lot of parents of Italians, especially previously, were totally, they couldn't imagine you'd make a living.
Ooh, right.
But
right.
Your folks were supportive.
Very supportive.
But you were like an all-star quarterback in high school, right?
Right, right. And my opportunities for college were football until this opportunity at Arizona State came through. So I was very fortunate there that I was able to never left Ohio until I went to college. And my father didn't have a college education. My mother didn't finish high school. So, and I had a younger brother and sister. So this was like, you know, a lot of tears, a lot of sadness. I'm going to Arizona, you know. So that, but then my parents drove out and stayed a month in my freshman year, and then they came out and stayed a couple months the next year because my dad couldn't work in the winter. And so he found some work out in Arizona for a while, and so we stayed close that way.
If I recall correctly when I spoke to you, did you say that your grandfather was
a... Yeah, my mother's, I think it was my mother's father was
your mother's. Okay.
I'm really not sure. I think it was my mother's father. No, excuse me, my father's father was the bootlegger.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your mom was Italian.
Mom was 100% right? Italian. Yeah.
What was her maiden name?
DeFrancisco.
The first name?
Angela.
And Ben was your dad?
Benedetto.
Benedetto. Really? Is there anything I haven't asked you that, or that you've never been asked, that you wish you had been asked about your career or anything?
No, I was really blessed. I mean, when I think back how things fell into place, everything worked out, coming to Milwaukee, raising our family here, and then becoming general manager. You know, I mean, just I wouldn't have thought those things would have happened. So, great. Thank you so much, Sal.